And now it's time for Stages.
Stages.
All the world's a stage.
It's where we talk about,
all things
theatrical.
It's about theatre.
Theatre makers.
If it's performing on a stage, we've got it for you here on Stages.
It's about half an hour long.
Okay, let's get on with the show.
Yes, let's get on the show. On with the show, it's Roderick Chambers here on Stages on 2SER 107.3, and I'm here with Tricia Stars.
Hi,
Good
Rod.
To see you again, Tricia.
You too.
Yes. Now, look, we've got another wonderful jam-packed show for you this week. There's still lots on, even though the festival's finished and we're sort of, everyone's sort of a bit, you know, over everything, and there's a lot of things that are starting up now. For instance, Tricia, at the Sydney Opera House, they've got a production of Wake in Fright, which is from the old movie, and we're going to be talking to the writer-director Declan Green about that. So it sounds like, you know, it's a bit of a change from the usual genres we get, isn't it, in players?
Yeah, exactly. And of course, as you were saying, the festival's over, but Mardi Gras starts. And
oh, that's right, another festival. That's good.
And the New Theatre always puts on a good production, and they're putting on Angry Fags this season, directed by the wonderful Mark Nagel, who we're going to speak to. Of course, Catherine Golden is going to do a review for us on Songs for Nobody, and another huge piece of news, Rod. The script entries are now open for Short and Sweet 2020-21 festival cycle. So if you're a budding writer and you've got a 10-minute script, get in there. They're at the following festivals. It's open for Canberra, Dublin, Kuala Lumpur, Penang, Auckland, Wellington, Hollywood, Brisbane, Gold Coast, Illawarra, Manila, oh my God, Dubai and Sydney. And so it's a huge list of cities.
So you can actually put something in Hollywood, can you?
Well, I'm pretty sure that if you're a Sydney person, put yours in Sydney, and if you're a Hollywood person, then put yours in Hollywood and see how you go.
Trish, we could work something up in Hollywood, couldn't we? And then we could sort of run around the studios and throw it in there and see what sticks.
Well, of course, but definitely get writing and submitting and get your play on in your city. And of course, lovely Sydney has a beautiful Short and Sweet festival every year here, run by the wonderful literary manager Alex Braun.
Yes, Alex has been doing it for many years, and thanks to him and lots of other wonderful creative people out there, probably listening right now, is the reason that Sydney is such a great place to be. So thank you. Thank you for making this place a worthwhile place to live in. Now, look, we're going to go for a short break, hear from our sponsors, but we're going to be back with you very soon here on Stages 2SER 107.3, so stay tuned.
In the House, Cult Film Classics returns to Event Cinemas George Street on April 8th, screening sci-fi classic Back to the Future, starring Michael J. Fox.
Doc, are you telling me that you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
The way I see it, if you're going to build a time machine into a car, why not do it with some style?
Do not miss your favourite cult classics back on the big screen now on Wednesday nights. Check the full film list and grab tickets at eventcinemas.com.au. Event Cinemas George Street sponsors 2SER.
Yes, here we are on Stages on 2SER 107.3. What's coming up, Trish?
We have on the line Declan Green, who has adapted Kenneth Cook's 1961 novel Wake in Fright into a play. And, of course, Declan has a lot of plays under his belt, Moth, Pompeii, L.A., 8 gigabytes of hardcore pornography, I'm a Miracle, Blackie Blackie Brown, and the list just goes on and on and on. Declan Green, welcome to Stages.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Gosh, Declan, how old are you? Done all this stuff.
That's a very intrusive question
to begin with.
I refuse to answer it. No, I'm 34.
Well, how could you have done all that stuff and only be 34? Anyway, sorry. Over to you, Trish. You're going to ask something.
Well, Declan, I did want to ask you, of course, a burning question about this production, which I think has run before in Melbourne but not here in Sydney. Zara Newman, who is just a fabulous actress, one of my favourite actresses, is playing this as a one-woman show. And, of course, this is taken from the Kenneth Cook novel Wake in Fright, but the 1971 movie Wake in Fright, directed by Ted Kotcheff, is of course something that affected all of us and we all remember. So I just wanted to ask you first up, how is it different from the movie, which was very masculine and had an all-male cast, in that it is a one-woman show?
Well, I think that coming into the project early on, I knew that a lot of the questions, social questions that the original novel Wake and Fright asks are about a particular kind of strain of Australian masculinity. And I thought early on that it would be really interesting to, I guess, draw that to the fore by finding a female performer to collaborate on the work. And as you say, I think Zara is one of the most remarkable performers in this country. And when I approached her, I was really, really excited to see how she would tackle this material and how she would take on the challenge of invoking the entire world of Bundi Yabba and every single character in Wake and Fright and manage the switches between them. But of course, because she's such a dexterous performer, it's quite an incredible Olympian thing to see live. And I guess that was kind of what helped crack open the novel when we started figuring how to adapt it, just taking on that form.
And Declan, are we going to be still a bit scared of going out to the countryside now, us city people?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things that that a lot of people often get mistaken about Wake and Fright is that it's a novel about, you know, the countryside or the heart of Australia, where I actually reckon that, and I think one of the things that Zara and I have kind of talked about a lot in terms of this adaptation is going, like, I actually think that Bundi Yabba itself is a microcosm of all of Australia, not just small town Australia.
Yeah.
Because I think that, you know, a lot of the questions that Kenneth Cook asks in it about hospitality and the type of, you know, how Australia as a country treats outsiders and people who are seeking sanctuary in it, I think these are very relevant sort of questions now. And I don't think they necessarily have to fall into a dialectic between city and country. I think they can actually fall into a dialectic between, I guess, mainstream Australia and categories of outsider, and the way that Australia demands people change their behaviour, or the way, I guess, certain types of mainstream Australia demands people change their behaviour or change their identity in order to be accepted or to find safety here.
I guess in, you know, Ted Kotcheff, who directed the 1971 film, he was a Canadian, and he really related to the book and making the film here, because he felt that masculinity he'd experienced in, you know, in his work in Canada, I think, you know, going out chopping down trees or something, out, you know, labouring out there. But I guess what he really saw in the book was toxic masculinity, where actually men had suppressed their feelings so much with alcohol and violence that they couldn't express it. And especially if there was any, you know, suggestion of homosexuality, that just turned to violence as well, or rape. So I'm just wondering how are those themes in this, because the outsider that you're talking about, that just makes so much sense to me in how you're approaching the book and the one-woman show play.
Well, yeah, I think that's something that the entire creative team on this play, like myself, Zara, Friendships, who's Nick Brown, who did the sound design, we're all people who kind of grew up in Australia in various ways feeling like we were outsiders. Mm. Me, it was because I'm queer. Zara came to Australia at the age of 13 from Jamaica. Nick from Friendships actually went on roo shoots when he was a teenager in rural South Australia, and was kind of like, you know, a weird queer goth kid. So we've all kind of felt those kind of rites of Australian masculine initiation, and felt the kind of danger that comes from not fitting in Australia into that kind of very specific kind of masculinist, you know, kind of like very protective, very nationalist kind of Australian identity, because it does come with danger in this country. And I think in a lot of countries, probably like you were saying, like you be it Canada, be it wherever else, not fitting into the centre does come with danger. And in Australia, I think it's fascinating that like Australian hospitality is held as being something that's, or, you know, we think of ourselves as a welcoming country, but it's kind of, I think the kind of contradictions at the core of Australian identity are really interesting, in the sense that we manage to hold in balance somehow this notion of ourselves as a hospitable, welcoming place, but also
we're very hospitable, Declan. We give people, put people on these lovely tropical islands off the coast.
That's what I mean. And it's incredible that we hold those two things, they can enjoy this
new environment before they actually come here, and it's a sort of a slow, you know, acclimatization process.
Yeah.
I think.
It's incredible to think of that we actually do manage to hold those things in balance in our Australian identity. But these are two things which are deeply contradictory. So many people in this country actually go, oh, yeah, those things make sense.
Yes. Well, look, I'm just wondering too, with the seed of the idea that got you into this, was it from, did you read the book or see the movie? How did it come to you that I could make this into something that's it takes it into a different realm?
I think I read the book first, and then I saw the movie, and I immediately had this kind of attraction to it, going like, I just think this is an amazing horror story. I love horror, and I knew that I'd love to tackle it in theater in some way. But it probably took me a good like 5 years or something to figure out the form, because I was always like, the thing about Australia, about Wake and Fright, is it's so about the landscape and this intense sense of isolation and claustrophobia, and going like, actually, how do you evoke that in a theater? Like that sense of vastness and something that's way all encompassing and being kind of crushed by the distance of all of this lack of proximity to civilization. So like, I couldn't figure it out. And then something kind of cracked open for me when I was like, actually, you just do it through language. Like you don't actually try and do a set or anything like that that evokes the place at all. You actually build it all in the minds of the audience. And that's effectively what Zara and myself and Friendships have done. It is a one-person show, which means that language and the conjuring of this place in the audience's imagination happens just through an actor. But then also we have this really immersive sound design that I think gives a sense of the kind of majesty and hugeness of the landscape as well. But yes, it's effectively an act of imagination and conjuring.
Yeah, because you've got, of course, you've got James Paul working on the sound design and Verity Hampson working on the projection and design. So I guess you do have a bit of a multimedia approach to it as well then?
Yeah, it's a very simple approach to the show. It's literally a ring of lights on stage, on the ground, that Verity has designed and programmed that can do some pretty showy kind of stuff. And then we have this, Friendships along with James Paul have programmed this very kind of vast and encompassing sound design. But it's all kind of there to really support this virtuoso performer, like this kind of one. Like it's really kind of an act of language, voice and sound, and that's what everything's kind of really built around and designed to support. So it's kind of very simple, but then it also becomes very kind of spectacular and huge.
You know,
as well.
I was just looking up Wake and Fright on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's 100%. There's very few 100% films. I know that you're not the film, but and what you were saying before, I think about people relating to it. I think that even though it is a story about the outsider, the young sort of cultured school teacher getting lost in the town and everything, I think it's something that we all relate to. It's funny, isn't it, that so many people loved the book and the film and related to it so much. Even, I mean, we can't all be outsiders in Australia, but I know, I think we do have experiences where we go to the outback or maybe work on boats or do something, you know, we all do experience it.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's also interesting that like it is such a beloved Australian text. Like it's one of those really kind of unquestioningly kind of canonical Australian films. But it's so funny that when it first like premiered in Australia, there's that great mythical story of somebody in the audience standing up and yelling out, "That's not us," at the screen. Yeah. And then Jack Thompson going, "Sit down, it is us." Like, I love that. I love that it actually really, it did, when it was first released, have the capacity to get under people's skins and make them actually feel uncomfortable in their identity as an Australian.
Well, Declan, I'm starting to get that feeling under my skin right now, and I'll have to get out and buy a ticket. It's on February the 11th to the 15th.
That's right. Yeah, just four performances.
Four performances. But at the lovely Playhouse at the Opera House there. So get out there and see that. And thank you, Declan Green, for being with us here at Stages at 2SER.
Thanks for having me.
On the Money is recommended for mature audiences only. It may and probably will contain explicit financial language, strong business themes, economic violence, coarse financial accounting, nudity, and credit references. 2SER recommends discreet listening once per week at 7 p.m. Thursdays.
And now we have a review from Catherine Golden. I believe it's Songs for Nobody. What have you been to see, Catherine?
Songs for Nobodies is a one-woman play written by Joanna Murray-Smith featuring Australian vocal superstar Bernadette Robinson. This is an incredibly unique piece of music theatre that brings to life the stories and the music of five of the most significant and genre-defining vocal divas of the mid-20th century. Judy Garland, Patsy Cline, Edith Piaf, Billie Holiday and Maria Callas. The cabaret-style play was written specifically for Bernadette Robinson, not only to showcase her virtuosic vocal abilities, but also her talent for mimicking the singing voices of others. Over the course of 90 minutes, Robinson flawlessly conjures up each of these era-defining vocal giants in succession, singing some of their biggest hits and offering the audience a glimpse of their stories through their fictional encounters with ordinary women. Music and history trivia is very cleverly intertwined with fiction in each heartbreaking scene, where Robinson's performance as both the ordinary woman and the diva in each scene is convincing and moving. Without skipping a beat, Robinson switches between Alabama, the Bronx, New York, British, French and Irish accents and seamlessly performs vocal gymnastics, particularly in the Maria Callas aria. All of this is performed on a black stage, cleverly laid out as a simple drawing room, with a chair centre stage. The direction from Simon Phillips is snappy, with Robinson on stage at all times, and lighting and backdrop changes signalling to the audience the various locations and symbolism. As well as Robinson's flawless acting and singing, the play is held together by three live musicians who are visible on stage at all times, but who are very cleverly unobtrusive, with piano, a musician on various woodwind instruments and bass guitar, and percussion, and we move from country to European pop to jazz and opera. The excitement in the air throughout each scene was palpable, and Robinson received a standing ovation at the opening night performance. I highly recommend Sydneysiders get along to this show, whether you're familiar with the songs and history of the singers or not. This is an incredibly moving piece of theatre. Songs for Nobodies is playing at the Sydney Opera House from the 23rd of January until the 2nd of February.
Yes, and on the line right now, we have the director of the new theatre. Are you the director, Alice?
No, I'm actually the acting theatre manager and publicist.
Oh, okay. Well, look, you know, there you are.
Everybody's confused.
We've got you on the line here for the new theatre because there's something going on with tobacco or something, isn't there? Angry Fags we've got on?
Yeah.
What have we got on there?
It's our Mardi Gras show.
Yes.
It's the Australian premiere of this very, very funny play. It's an American play written by a guy called Topher Payne. He is a Georgia native, and this is set in Georgia. And it is a political satire with an LGBTQI slant.
Alice, yes, Tricia here. So lovely you could talk with us today.
Hey,
Tricia. Hi. About Angry Fags. I guess the debate is quite polarised, and sometimes it's very hard, I guess, to find a middle ground these days in the conversation. And I guess with all the hate speech that has been openly allowed against, gay men, which I think this play is predominantly about, yeah, it's kind of like, well, where do you go? I mean, do you jump as far as you can jump as well, or do you try to pull everyone into the middle, which seems impossible when it's so polarised?
Yeah, so that's what it addresses. It addresses those questions exactly, but it does it in a humorous way.
Yeah.
with a very sort of black Tarantino twist at the end, yeah? So it's one of the things I really like about the play is that it's not black and white. All the shades of greys and the nuances that you look at where you kind of go, ooh, that's a kind of ethical dilemma, where do I sit there, are looked at. And one of the interesting factors is that it's not just gay men. There's a lesbian character in this as well.
Yeah.
And she's actually a sitting state senator. She's up for re-election. And her opponent is another woman who is African-American but is also hand-in-glove with the Christian right. So you've got those two kind of really interesting opponents, both of playing the political game for all they're worth. Mm. And the trigger for one of these gay guys who happens to work for the lesbian senator, the sitting senator, is that his ex-boyfriend is bashed and she refuses to say it's a hate crime because under Georgia law, crimes against homosexuals aren't hate crimes. Mm. And that's the premise. And it's, that's what tips them over.
Right.
And so you've actually got a gay politician refusing to come out and label an act of violence against a homosexual person as a hate crime because under the law of the state that she is a senator of, it's not a hate crime. It looks also at the power of the media. There's a character in the play who is a television anchor. And she's very powerful, and she's a very interesting character. And so it looks, there's a lot of media and AV in this production, and it looks at how the media is manipulated to tell whatever story the powers that be want told at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about the stage journalism media here. It's just more the newsy types. That's good. Yeah, because we're a much milder bunch, I think, as stage journalists. You've got quite a big cast in this too, haven't you?
Seven.
That's a lot these days.
Yeah, that's a lot these days.
Sorry, we talked to someone who's had a single person show, so this is a lot compared to that.
No, we don't. We always do large cast shows here. Well,
that's what's lovely about the new, yes.
It's got seven actors in it. So there's three women and four women and three guys in the play.
And this is a very subversive, as you're saying, political satire. And I know that terrorism is an ugly thing, you know, people getting stabbed by people running up and down bridges in London or,
yeah.
You know, shootings at mosques or that awful things that have been happening, which makes us all quite sick. And yet how can the boys sort of taking that leap towards, you know, taking the law into their own hands, how can that be a humorous thing, you know, when we've all been, you know, faced
exactly.
personally?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, well, that's how satire works, you know. So that's what makes it not just a laugh out loud, you know, situation comedy, but it actually makes you laugh at things that are actually black or, that's what its purpose is, to actually make you laugh at something that in my normal circumstances you would pretty much be appalled at.
Mm.
Yeah, and then make you question it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think, yeah. I mean, the interesting thing with this play was that we had originally programmed it to do it last year, and we decided to pull it because of Christchurch.
Mm-hmm.
And we just felt that it was the Christchurch the tragedy happened only about, you know, a couple of months, and we just felt it was too close to the bone.
Mm.
It would be read the wrong way. And so now we've put it on partly because we think it's suitable for Mardi Gras because it does deal with LGBTQI issues and characters without it just being a coming out story or oh my God, my life is awful because I'm gay story.
Yeah.
It's actually something else. It's actually having, you know, a normal situation. Every day is not normal, but everyday situations.
Mm.
And sexuality is actually not the driving issue.
Mm. Yeah,
it's just who they are, not the be all and end all of the situation that they're in.
And I think what you're saying too, you know, that just because you're gay, you're a certain type of person, that these people are you know, just like anybody, capable of anything or capable of feeling anything or reacting in ways.
Someone described this as saying, "What if good guys go bad?"
Yeah, yeah.
And that's exactly why I thought that was a great line, and I actually used it in the media release because it is in a kind of way. You know, it's good gay guys gone bad.
Yeah.
and so they
well, that
are.
Makes a great drama, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. And of course, it's that's another part of it. It makes you sit there going, oh, I mean, I really like these guys and they're gay and I'm gay. Or, you know, if you're an audience member who's gay and you're sitting there going, but I'm not sure about that, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like if you're a Christian and you see some people acting in, you know, Christian ways and go, that is so not the Christianity that I espouse.
And then,
you know, the Christians who... You look at the difference between the church that Scott Morrison goes to and Father Rob up in Gosford, and the difference is immense, and yet they're both Christian, you know?
I even find a bit of humour in the title, Angry Fags.
Yes.
I know a lot of people don't like to use the word fags anymore.
Well,
but
no, that's right. And, of course, the interesting thing as well is that that is a kind of term much more used in America than it is in Australia.
Yeah, yeah.
The term faggot is pejoratively used here, more by older people, maybe not. Maybe it's come back a bit. It's a horrible word anyway. And similarly, fag and poof and, you know, all of those words that people use. But fag is very much an American word.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose it is. It's something you'd hear.
Much more commonly used in America to talk about a homosexual man than here,
yes,
I would say.
True.
I mean, I'm just speaking generally, but that's what I'm kind of thinking. So that's, you know, the title is. And the title in itself is, I mean, because the playwright is gay.
Mm.
And the title in itself, I think, is a kind of a bit of a slap in your face and a bit of a.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's a joke. Yeah, angry fags is a joke because when you hear it, you do have a bit of a giggle when you first hit the title because you imagine angry fags and there's something sort of, I don't know, funny about that idea of people who are genuinely sort of, you know, nice people being angry. It's sort of, you know.
Exactly. What are they going to sort of, you know, stamp on their balloons or something.
Yeah.
You know,
it's kind of a lower level
cliche, and I'm not supporting that at all.
Yeah,
but
You
know, yes, exactly. And so, and I think it is that whole idea. But they aren't.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway,
they,
look.
They aren't. It's not like others. They aren't. But they are.
Yeah.
Because they are just like everybody else. And they have all of the emotional responses to things, and they have. Sit on all sides of the political spectrum, just like everybody else does. And that's what I actually really like, as I said before, about doing this play, is it is actually not just... It's a play with much wider reach than just simply an LGBTQI audience.
Yes.
And I think that's important as well.
So it is on during Mardi Gras season on the 29th. You're opening, aren't you?
Preview tonight.
Oh, preview tonight.
Preview tonight. Right. And there are still tickets available, and they're only $20, and you can get them from the door at 6:30. So, you know. And we open tomorrow night and then play through to the 7th of March.
And you're very inclusive, and anyone can go, can't they?
Anyone can go.
Anyone at all.
It's got adult themes, so, you know, it's not
for kids.
But, yeah, anyone is welcome, absolutely.
Right.
And I don't, and it's, we always have a very strong following during Mardi Gras. We have an audience who come to see every one of our Mardi Gras shows. They're very supportive. And we were one of the first theatre companies in Sydney to start producing for the Mardi Gras Festival, and we've done one every year for 25, 26 years.
Yes.
Well, Alice, I have to say, I have been to them for about the last, must be 6 or 7 years.
Yes.
And they are always so good. They're always so top-notch and really well done and really well acted, lovingly put on, I have
but
to say.
Vastly different in terms of how they, you know, address things. So that... Ooh.
Sounds like it's time to go. Thank you very much, Alice, for being with us here.
We've got the fire alarm people here doing a test.
All right. Better let you go. Thank you very much, Alice, for being here with us on stage.
Thank you, Alice.
Okay.
Really appreciate it. See you
later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Excuse me. I have a show to finish.
And that's about all we've got time for here on Stages this week. Trish, we've run out again. How has that happened? It just seems to keep happening.
There's so much to talk about on Stages.
We'll just have to come back next week.
Yes, we will.
We will.
How
exciting. We'll come back next week on Wednesday at 7 o'clock. So you put that in your diary.
Yes.
If you've got one. If you haven't got one, you just have to put it into one of those electronic things you've got on your phone. and it'll beep at you, and you'll think, "Oh, what have I got to do?" You have to get the radio out and put it onto stages or stream us or whatever you want to do. That's okay. We don't care. We love you here at Stages. It's been great being at your place, and we're going to be back again next week. Thank you for listening.